outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. When you listen to WFHB, sometimes you can't predict what you're going to hear next. Isn't that wonderful? Our volunteer DJs play music you won't find anywhere else on the radio. Our award-winning news and public affairs programs aren't heard on other stations, and we celebrate the delightful diversity and vibrant culture of South Central Indiana. But when you listen, remember that we need you. We always need donations from listeners to keep on going and growing. If you click the donate button on our website, wfhb.org, you'll find out how easy it is to become a sustaining member. If you can give us a small donation every month, automatically and securely, you'll help WFHB in the best way possible. And then when you hear our fun drive appeals, you'll feel really good. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. It's Inside Outdoors, and this is Don Jordan, and I'm here on Zoom with Rich Reard.
Hey.
Hey, Rich.
How's it going?
Oh, good, good. We're still not in the studio, but this is okay for now.
Yeah, we're doing all right here, and Bill says hi. He can't join us today, but we're doing the best we can, folks, to keep things moving here.
Yes, and moving they are. We actually have some news today, which is we haven't had a hot lot of lately. There hasn't been much to report, but there is now.
Well, how about we start out with the lake temperature and all that good stuff, our basic stuff.
Yes, let's do that. Number one, the lake temperature is 26.6 degrees centigrade, which you said was nearly 80 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
That's the surface temperature down at the dam. And let's see, we got we have dissolved oxygen at I'll find it here. There we go. Dissolved oxygen is pretty good at the surface, but it disappears about, that looks about 15 feet. Below 15 feet, you're not going to get many fish. And it's 79 degrees, clear down to 20 feet. So pretty steady temperatures at the lake.
And right.
I noticed on one of the posts I saw this week, fishermen on the Lake Monroe site, that the water temperatures and oxygen levels have been not satisfactory for wipers, but they'd been catching them down at Patoka. I don't know whether you saw that picture or not, but pretty nice wipers they're catching down at Patoka.
Yeah, they were big. They looked nice, too.
Yeah, yes.
Very healthy.
Very nice. And lake levels, here we got Lake Monroe level at Monroe. It's 556 feet. No, 539.5, that's what it is, and it's usually 538 is normal pool. So it's 539.5 feet. That's a foot and a half above normal.
Well, we've certainly had the rain for it.
Yeah, we have. Actually, a foot and a half doesn't sound too bad. You know, that's certainly within fishing norms.
Well, when the other day I talked to Bill, he had 6-point-something inches in one day.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That one day that it rained. I guess when was that, Sunday?
I don't know. We've had a couple of days where we had gully washers. You know?
Yeah, well, anyway, we've had quite a bit of rain down here on the south end of town, and I'm sure pretty much everywhere else, because it looked pretty gray and gloomy out there for the whole day for everybody. But, boy, it's been good for the gardens. How's your garden doing?
Oh, man, Matt, I can't believe how good our tomatoes are this year.
Yeah, tomatoes are looking fantastic everywhere.
Boy, it's just amazing, really. I was going to attribute it to using that tomato tone fertilizer, which is worm castings. But I think it has a lot more to do with the amount of water that they're getting.
Right.
And I may have told you or reported to everybody last week that I had read that you don't want to starve your tomatoes of water. That's something they really need, and they need a lot of. So
yeah.
When it's not raining, you better be out there watering. You know?
Right.
And I'm sure that that's something I've neglected the past few years. And the blight is not near as bad this year.
No. I wonder whether that has something to do with the amount of water.
Well, it must have, but I still have the blight.
Yeah.
It's really affected the one of my little cherry tomato plants, but they're still producing tomatoes.
Yeah.
And I got to give that to the water. Only thing I wonder about on the water is, as you know, I'm on city water. I don't know whether you are or not. Are you on city water down there in Harrisburg?
Yep.
Well, that means you got chlorine, right?
So,
I don't know how chlorine loads up in these frame. I have a frame garden,
right,
above ground, you know, and I'm just wondering if that might have some effect on it too. And then all the rain that we've had has maybe washed that out a little. And gee, things are going good. My beans are still producing. I thought we'd pick 3 batches of beans out of the green beans, and they're blooming again and going to have another harvest. So
right.
That's really unheard of. They like these cool temperatures too. That's really beneficial to beans. And it seems the tomatoes don't mind it either.
Well, we had some, we've done a little pruning back because we have so many. And so this week we've had a few instances of fried green tomatoes around here.
Fried green tomatoes
have been awfully darn good, which is another thing you can do this time of year if you like, if you have enough of them.
I think they taste a little like mushrooms, don't you?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Uh huh. They have kind of that taste.
We've been finding a lot of mushrooms too. So,
oh boy,
we found
lots of
chanterelles and some those what do you call them, the bell. The ones you get kind of at Kroger or wherever, you know.
Oh, buttons?
Button, that's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
I've been seeing some in my yard here lately that look like shiitakes. Now, they're probably not shiitakes, but
right.
Boy, they sure look like them. They had a large, round, brown head.
Yeah.
And pretty meaty head on them.
Right.
And lots of little mushrooms of different varieties. And I mowed the yard the other day, kind of made me feel bad to cut them down. So, but, you can't make a detour around every mushroom you come across.
Absolutely. Well, they're all connected. So I saw some really interesting, I've been following this guy named Paul Stamets, who's, does a lot of research with fungi of all types. And, I think I've mentioned him before, but anyway, it's pretty interesting stuff. He was talking about mycelium, which means pretty much the entire living sort of entity that is at the bottom of our forest floors that we don't really notice, even though it's there. I mean, you see it when it pops up as a various different types of mushroom, but
those are the fruiting bodies,
right? It had a, there was some really interesting things that he was saying about that it was almost conscious, because the way that it's really enhanced and brought about other forms of life. In other words, it's sort of like the primordial ooze that we all come from, you know, when you look at how far back in the history of the earth that it showed up and stuff as a living organism. It's pretty interesting.
Well, mycelium, of course, you might call it the root system of the fungus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, when you order fungus to grow from a magazine or whatnot, that's what you get. You get the mycelia suspended in a malt solution.
Right.
And you put that on whatever medium you're going to grow it on.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important part, I've done this a couple times actually, and is controlling the humidity and the temperature.
Right.
It has to be with a fairly narrow range for them to make fruiting bodies. And that's the reason why morels are pretty sensitive to the temperature and humidity, water levels, that rain, et cetera. You got to be, we got to have those 60 degree nights and some rain, you know, then you're going to see morels in the spring.
Well, that's what we've been seeing, right? I mean, I was amazed at how cool it was last night and even this morning. It feels like the fall already, really.
Oh, yes. I was going to mention that. It does feel like fall.
Yeah.
Well, it's not going to last long. And as you know, if you've looked ahead for the weather, we're getting back to 90 degrees next week.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm used to. But even last time, what was it, a week ago or so when it was 90s, it wasn't that humid. It really wasn't as bad as typically the Indiana 2 weeks or so that we get that's super hot and super humid hasn't really happened yet.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at my weather station right now. It's reading 79 degrees, but it's only 49% humidity. And that's the kind of humidity you see in the wintertime, 30 to 45% humidity. And of course, this is the reason why you all have chapped lips. Get your Carmax out and you can live with that. And as you say, it does feel, I'm sitting here with a fleece jacket on.
Right.
And I got shorts on, but wish I didn't. So, this is beautiful weather, just absolutely beautiful. And the change of weather right at the change usually is bad for fishing. But as it stays this way for a day or two, I'd say tomorrow will probably be a really good fishing day.
Well, this isn't going to help us on Saturday morning, but today, which is Wednesday, it is mid-afternoon, like 3:10 p.m., and in 76 degrees. So pretty unusual for beginning of August.
Yes, it definitely is, and I'll take it. I spoke to my friends out in Montana, up in the mountains this morning earlier, and it was 52 degrees here at my house this morning on the north side of Bloomington. And it was like 58 in up in the mountains at 7,500 feet.
Wow.
And it was going to be up in the 80s there today. So we got better than mountain weather.
Yeah. It's been beautiful. I'm not complaining at all.
No, it is beautiful. And the birds have been singing. You have the windows open in the morning, and we have a pair of Carolina wrens that just tea kettle tea. You know how loud they are. They just let it rip in the morning, and that's a very pleasant thing to wake up to.
Sure is.
Very pleasant.
Been hearing a lot of birds around here, and I, as I've said before, the katydids and the crickets and the frogs at night are going crazy, so everybody's pretty happy in this wet weather.
Yes, it's great. The katydids, of course, they're one of the loudest insects of all, at night especially.
Yeah.
you get that sudden, you know, I can't make their sound, but I really like to hear them.
Yeah, I do too. I've complained for a long time about not hearing them enough, because when I was a kid in the lake in New Jersey, which I've told you about a few times, where I grew up in summers and everything, I mean, we didn't have air conditioning or anything, and so I remember pulling my bed by the window and opening the window with the screen there, and outside it was just like, you know, it's just this cacophony of insects, you know, and it was very soothing. It gets into a rhythm, you know, and you just kind of like, boom, you're asleep, you know.
Well, I know that when I lived in Florida, we'd have a rainy night. As soon as that rain would stop, or sometimes even while it was starting to slacken, mm-hmm. the tree frogs would get going, and they get into this cyclical, they call it chorusing, rhythm of song, and it just rah. And if you've never heard that before, you got to go stay out in the woods some night when it, this time of year, when it's right after a rain at night. It's awesome.
Yep, I love it. It really is.
It's just awesome. And right now, all the birds are pretty much singing. I've got a towhee that sits in the bush right outside the window. And as I said, the two Carolina wrens. And, oh, this morning I saw, first time I've seen this, a cardinal feeding a cowbird baby.
Oh, wow.
So the cardinal was victimized by the cowbirds. I've never seen that before. I'm sure it has happened, but that's the first time I've seen a cardinal doing that duty.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I haven't even seen any adult cowbirds around. They lay their eggs and left, I guess. So there you go.
Yep. Excuse me. Seen a lot of vultures for some reason down here the last few days.
Black-headed?
Yeah, a lot of them. I don't know why. I normally you'll see one or two kind of crossing above, but I've seen quite a few in the trees. And it probably just has something to do with the weather. It's just easier for them to live or something. I don't know, but they seem to be just kind of not on the move as much.
Well, here's what's going on. The migration actually starts now. Mm-hmm. And they don't move. They don't go all the way to South America right away. And they move as far as they feel like moving, and they stop in places that have plenty of food and the right temperature and, right. you know, everything. It's kind of like being on vacation for them, I think.
Right.
And that's what's going on right now. And you know, vultures do migrate. And
actually, I didn't know that. I thought they kind of stuck around.
No, they do migrate. And of course, the Hinckley, Ohio, you know, they have the big, when the vultures return in the spring every year, that's a big festival over there.
Right.
And I've been talking about this with some of the people on that Indiana Nature Photographers and Nature and Wildlife Photographers site. Mm-hmm. Up in northern Indiana, they aren't seeing black-headed vultures. They're still seeing lots of turkey vultures. That's the one with the red wattle.
Right.
On their head. Whereas around here, it's rare for me to see a turkey vulture now. They're almost all black-headed vultures. And it didn't used to be that way. It was all turkey vultures. So the black-headed vultures are expanding their range north, obviously.
Yeah.
And probably climate connected, probably.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing to note. The I noticed we had a wood thrush here a couple weeks ago that moved on. So some of the birds are moving right now. I haven't heard our northern peewee. Or eastern peewee, I guess it is, which the ones that goes do you in the evening usually, mm-hmm. a very pleasant little song. So they may have moved on too, and I did see one of our ground threshers still here, which kind of surprised me, but I haven't heard them singing. So I expect them to be moving on any time, and we'd probably be seeing the Orioles coming back through before too long.
Right.
So you might want to think about your orange supply and your jelly supply if you happen to hear an Oriole out there.
Right.
Which, boy, you can't pass up an Oriole. They're so pretty.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Yes, they are. It's a treat to see them. And, of course, our president has just removed protections for migrating birds that kept them from landing, hopefully kept them from landing in oil pools and other industrial waste places.
Right.
We've already lost, what was the figure since 1970, 30 billion birds?
Something like that.
In North America. It's really pitiful. Of all the things that I enjoy in nature, hearing birdsong is probably number one.
Yeah.
I got to say, number one. They make life worth living.
Well, I was saying last week, I don't remember if I said this on the show or just when I talked to you, but I saw a lot when I was out west a couple of weeks ago. I saw a lot of hummingbirds, a whole bunch of them. And you told me there were a lot in Texas, but I didn't realize they were up in the mountains, but they certainly are. I saw them both in New Mexico and Colorado.
Yes, those southwestern states really have the hummingbird load.
Yep.
If you want to see different birds, that's the place to go. If the virus settles down and things work out, health wise, I believe we'll probably take the camper to New Mexico and Texas this coming winter instead of Florida.
Right.
Just for that reason, to see the birds. And we did that a couple of years ago, and in March is the Texas wildflowers. You may have heard of Texas wildflowers.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Boy, if you ever see them once, you want to go back. That's just spectacular. And then you add the hummingbirds and all of the other different birds that they have down there that you never see here.
Right.
And it's really worthwhile.
Well, I was kind of amazed at how big they were. They're just a little bigger than you'd see around here. I don't know whether, I mean, a lot of things are bigger out there, like if you survive in the mountains, maybe you have to eat more or something, but they just seemed a little, and it might be the species, but, they just seemed a little bigger. And boy, when they flew around you, it was like, vroom, you just like, wow, something just went by me fast,
Yes, many of the hummingbird species are larger than the only one we have here is the ruby throat, and maybe once in a while an anna's. Anna's you see more out west, of course, but the ruby throat is our hummingbird, and they're fairly small. The smallest one is, I think, the gray whiskered hummingbird, which we don't have here, but you might have seen in New Mexico or Colorado when you were out there.
Well, I was kind of amazed. We were at, I'm guessing, probably 8,000 feet or something, because we were on the way up a mountain. And got towards the top. It wasn't, it wasn't above the tree line or anything, but we stopped at a brook or a stream that was there, and just kind of hung out for a while. And there was a lot of them. There was I counted at least 7 or 8 at one time.
Wow.
And they were just going all over the place. Of course, you can see a little farther there, but they were kind of coming over to me. And then when I took out my video camera, they all disappeared. I was trying to get a good close-up of them. A couple of times, they were really close to me, just a few inches away, not inches, but maybe a couple feet away even. And they would just kind of come up because I had a red, something red on. I forget whether it was my bandana or something, but they were attracted to it. And But they weren't very colorful, like the ruby-throated ones here. They're beautiful if they come up to you, you know. You can see the color on them and the shininess. And these were just a little duller and bigger, but they didn't have a lot of color. But they were certainly running around having a great time. They seemed to be very busy, you know.
Well, they are busy. they are very busy. Talking about these hummingbirds, it just takes me back. You've probably heard me mention in the past that I worked in Central America for a while back in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And boy, you want to see hummingbirds.
Oh, I bet.
That's the place to go. And there are some of them that they're as large as a sparrow.
Right.
Just awesomely large and beautiful colors and bright purples and just awesome things. And if you put up a hummingbird feeder there, it's like hummingbird battles. You almost have to put up more than one hummingbird feeder to protect the hummingbirds from each other.
Right.
They're very aggressive and they go after you.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Well, it was totally fun to see them. And, I was glad to see that they were that prolific and busy and happy. You know, they have to be busy because they use up so much energy that I was kind of thinking, I guess there must be a lot of wildflowers up here because they certainly, they were there. And if the flowers aren't there, they aren't there. So.
Well, that's right. They have a short season at altitude like that. And, mm-hmm. The birds that do stick around at those altitudes, at least up in the, northern latitudes, would be the Stellar Jay. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with that from being in California, I'm sure.
Yep.
And the Gray Jay or Whiskey Jack or Camp Robber, that's the most entertaining bird of them all, which will land in your hand.
Yeah.
Dangerous pursuit to land in any human's hand, but
or on your picnic table, hence the picnic robber or camp robber.
Yes, right. I had one in Canada one year on a canoe trip actually land in a skillet and steal a piece of fish of being fried.
I believe it.
Just birds.
Well, I tell you, another bird I saw which we haven't talked about yet, but and they're prolific out there, is the magpie.
Oh yeah, the black and white one.
Right, and they're very they get pretty tame because they want to come up to you and get fed. If you're in a campground or something, you tend to see them a lot.
Yes, they're in the same family. They're corvids, jays, and that's also includes the crows.
Yeah.
They're among the smartest birds. They probably are the smartest birds.
They are smart birds, definitely.
They habitually use tools, which used to be a definition of man until we found out that lots of other animals use tools,
mm-hmm.
and is no longer part of the definition of being human. And I'm glad.
Yeah.
We are not alone. Anyway, it's a wonderful world, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Wonderful world. That's Louis Armstrong's song.
I highly recommend if you get the chance to take a trip out there south. One place I haven't gone is South Texas, which I'd really like to, down there by the Big Bend.
Big Bend, yeah, Big Bend's a great place.
I'd love to see that. I really would.
Southeast Texas is where the wildflowers are just
right
bursting. That McAllen, Texas, that's the bird place.
Right
there must be 20 or 30 bird sanctuaries within 20 miles or 30 miles of McAllen, Texas, and a lot of them along the Rio Grande. And the Highway 77 is the highway for the wildflowers.
Yeah.
And just in case, thanks to Lady Bird, and also it's part natural too. Lady Bird Johnson, of course, established the National Wildlife Society or Wildflower Society back in her day.
She was a Texan.
yes, she was. And she was a force, and she did us a great favor by encouraging the planting of wildflowers along the interstate highway system.
Absolutely. I got a friend that just moved to Austin, and I have another close friend that lives there, so maybe I'll have to fly down there and say, hey, get your car out, let's go down there.
Well, I certainly think that'd be a good excuse to go down there.
Sure, it wouldn't be too far to drive. It's still a little ways to get to South Texas from there, but they're pretty south.
Right, right. Well, yeah. It's when you're talking about Texas, a matter of 200-300 miles is nothing.
Right.
So, you know, when you're talking a short drive, yeah, you know, short drives is 150, 200 miles.
Yeah.
Like they say, it's a big state.
Yep.
Of course, Alaska's even bigger, but they don't have any roads.
Right.
And, well, anyway, Texas is having a hard time right now with the virus.
Yeah.
My wife actually has a sister that lives in Corpus Christi, outside of Corpus Christi. They didn't get hit too hard by the hurricane.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. But they had one a couple of years ago. They lost a goat. A goat killed in a hurricane.
Wow.
They're right in that Gulf of Mexico hurricane area. Sometimes it's not the best place, but a lot of times it is. Yeah, beautiful place.
So what else we got? You said you had a couple things to bring up.
Well, I got some actual news here, if I can get it up, if I can find it here. Governor Holcomb names Bortner as director of the Department of Natural Resources. We have a new DNR director now, and you know, I got to say, this is probably one of the better appointments as a DNR director that I can recall. I mean, we had some really stinkos appointed back under Daniels and before, actually, but this guy is a whole different story. Let me read to you a little bit about what his background is.
What's his name?
His name is Dan Bortner, Bortner, served as director of DNR. He was a director of state parks, Indiana State Parks, since 2005, currently the third longest serving state parks directory in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
As director of state parks, Bortner took the division from preparing to close facilities to consistently operating in the black, with 98% of guests saying they would recommend our parks to others. Now that's a major improvement, because
I would say so.
The last time I visited our state parks, which was, around 2008, 2009, somewhere along in there,
mm-hmm.
they were looking pretty bad, pretty run down. Campgrounds were not nice. Now, infrastructure updated under Bortner's leadership has led to improved campgrounds that are typically full each weekend. And the state park inns have the highest occupancy rate of any state park inn system in the country.
Hmm.
That's pretty amazing, considering how it used to be just a few years ago. Bortner increased public lands across the state park system, including the Trine State Recreation Area in Steuben. That's the way they pronounce it up there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of Steuben, named after von Steuben, you know, the Revolutionary War general,
sure.
Hero. Steuben, von Steuben, Steuben County, and the state's only underwater nature preserve in Lake Michigan. Additionally, he oversaw the purchase of the Fort Harrison State Park Inn in Indianapolis. He earned a degree in public affairs from Indiana University, serves as the president of the National Association of State Park Directors. DNR State Parks, Reservoirs, and Nature Preserves host tens of millions of guests each year. Agency is also charged with regulatory responsibility for wildlife and our land and water resources. Former director Cam Clark retired in July. Bortner will begin his new position on Monday. And this was dated July the 29th. So he's in on the job now.
Nice. Well, so, I hope that improves the DNR around here.
Well, I hope it does too. I think that the DNR needed a guy like this, and more power to him. More power to him.
Absolutely. Maybe we can try to communicate with him and get him on the show on a Zoom one of these days. That'd be fun.
Well, that would be good. You probably have to do it before we get back to our 7 o'clock in the morning on Saturday.
That's why this might be a good time to do a few of these. We'll probably be using Zoom more in the future. So.
That's right. I got another note from the DNR here about deer licenses are for sale for the 2021 deer hunting season. Season dates and answers to deer hunting facts can be found at deer.dnr.in.gov. That's pretty easy. Deer licenses can be purchased at an authorized retailer or online at on.in.gov/NIN hunt fish. There's also a direct link to that on DonJordanOutdoors.com at the bottom of the page. And you must sign up for an Access Indiana account this year before purchasing your license online if you haven't done that already. We reckon, 'cause, you know, you can make your reservations for campgrounds there and just about anything else that you have to do that requires paperwork, used to require paperwork, you can do it with your Indiana Access account. And I'd recommend doing that. It saves you a lot of time. It's hard to find a place, although you can still go to a couple of places. Walmart is one, I know, still sells a license if you don't have a computer. You can go to Walmart, and there may be another store or two. I don't know what they are exactly. Probably Dick's, but I wouldn't say that for sure. Mm-hmm. And the online is the easiest thing. Of course, if you're over 65, you can get a senior citizen's lifetime fishing license, which everybody should do. I have mine, and they're save you a lot of work and trouble and money. There are presently, it says here, 18 services that users can enter through this Access Indiana account. See if there's any other goodies in this that you need to find out about. Oh, it's also time. Deadline for reserved hunt applications is August 17th. Mm-hmm. So that's coming right up. Those reserved hunts include the state park deer management hunts, you know, where they close the state parks and you get to shoot the deer in the state park. Only one application per hunt is allowed. No changes can be made after the application is submitted. Plays the transit, if the transition says, et cetera, it's good.
I lost you, Don.
Oh, you,
oh, there you go. Just for a second. There you go. Okay. Start that sentence over.
Okay. Well, I don't know where I left off. But,
just literally 10 seconds ago.
Well, there's really not much left to say about that.
Okay.
The next thing coming, the next thing they have here, you got the August 17th deadline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. For the reserved hunts.
Yeah.
They're going to have the actual printed hunting and trapping guide available later this month. Pick up a copy at your local retailer, and that would probably mean your, I suppose, your bait shop or hunting shop. At least that's what they were. They used to be. It will also be posted online at hunting.in.gov. And Harvest Information Program registration, if you want to be involved in that for the migratory bird hunting season, that's coming up. Hunting season starting soon. Gray fox and fox squirrel hunting season begin August 15th. Run through January the 31st, 2021. Hunting seasons for rail, Sora rail, Mourning Doves and Snipe open September 1. Season dates for all these early migratory seasons will be in the hunting and trapping guide, or you can look at them online. There's some information about fish kills, which I know a lot of people have noticed at Lake Monroe when the weather was so hot. Dissolved oxygen dropped and the temperatures went up and the algae bloomed and the fish died. That happens nearly every year. It's usually massive die-offs of shad, but I noticed this year that we had some largemouth bass reported dead, and besides the shad, but that was mainly it, shad and some largemouth bass, and there may have been a wiper or two. The gizzard shad are notorious for that. Notorious.
Yeah.
So what's biting? The state fair's fishing pond. You remember they always had fishing ponds up there where right. they showed you the fish that lived in Indiana and whatnot. State fair is canceled this year. And they want to remind you that you can still go fishing, and it's one of the things you can do without having to worry too much about crowding. Only person you got to worry about is who the people on your boat, and usually that's somebody you know pretty well. And you know, people have formed pods. People they know have not been sick and probably aren't going to be sick because they stay at home just like you do, and you know, wear masks and. Wash their hands, et cetera, et cetera. Hanging around those people is like being part of your family. So that's a good thing to do with them, with your closest friends, if you trust them and know how they might behave. Mm-hmm. Okay, and here's another reminder from DNR. Turkey brood reports still needed. Each summer, they ask us to count the number of young wild turkeys, or poults, P-O-U-L-T-S, with turkey hens in brood surveys. These surveys provide the Division of Fish and Wildlife with information about the poult survival and decide on action plans for wild turkey management. In other words, how many turkeys, where, et cetera, et cetera. So far, citizens have reported more than 500 observations. We need 2,500 more to reach our goal of 3,000 turkey brood observations. So anyone can report turkey sightings. That's anyone. You don't have to be a hunter. Turkey sightings with the number of babies you see with them at on.in.gov/turkey brood. Turkey brood. There you go. And let's see, what else we got? Upcoming events, learn to hunt. Of course, last week we told you about all of the hunter education classes this year. There's lots of them this year around the state. And that link is posted on the Inside Outdoors Facebook page. Be easy to find those. What else is going on? Well, that's about it right now. So from the DNR anyway, and that pretty newsy DNR day.
Right. Absolutely.
Especially with the new DNR director. And we wish him luck and a lot of success.
Absolutely.
I'll turn it over to you for a few minutes. I'm getting hoarse.
Well, I got a couple things to talk about. I mean, one big outdoor thing, which I thought was just pretty fascinating and terrible at the same time, was the explosion in Beirut.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that on TV?
Oh, yeah. It looked like a nuclear bomb.
Well, apparently they've come up with some reasons. You wonder whether it's terrorism because of or war, you know, when something like that happens, because it was a huge explosion. Unfortunately, I think they've found about 100 people killed so far, but I thought it would have probably been way higher than that because it was pretty much downtown. It was in the docks district of Beirut. But what they've said is that apparently there was 2,750 metric tons of ammonium nitrate stockpiled there. So I think we know what happened. If that gets contaminated with, you know, it's a agricultural fertilizer. We all kind of probably heard about it with the Oklahoma City bombing. But because that was only a little truck full of it, you know.
Right.
So I don't know how many pounds that was, but I think if I remember, it was something like 100 pounds or something. It wasn't anywhere near.
They had some 55-gallon drums in the back of a van.
Right. You know? But this was 2,750 metric tons, and you could see there was a fire going at first because the news cameras were taking picture from a helicopter or something of just this big fire, and then all of a sudden kablooey, and apparently the fire can set it off.
Well, it has to have a catalyst. It needs to have some fuel of some kind. Diesel fuel is what they used in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Right, and it had been there for, I don't know how many years, 2014 years. Or something, yeah.
13 years, I believe, is what they said on the news today.
Well, they had said that possibly mold and other things, there was other organic things that could have sort of accumulated there, or fuel that might have leaked into it, you know what I mean? Hard to say, but apparently something did leak into it. But that was really quite amazing, and I'm glad not more than more people weren't killed, because it's amazing. There was some sort of a building next to it. It looked like some kind of agricultural thing, you know, like where they were storing grain or something, that took a lot of the blast, kind of kept it away from the city, which was pretty interesting. But I thought that was something that happened that we might want to mention on the show.
Well, I heard on Morning Edition on NPR this morning, a man in Beirut talking about this and saying that there wasn't a building in Beirut that was spared damage.
Right, I believe it.
Every building in Beirut was damaged in more or less, a lot of them more, you know.
Right.
And the ground, the actual ground where this building was storing this ammonium nitrate, it's gone.
Yeah, it's just a big crater.
It blew the earth away.
Yeah.
You know? And I know you saw it, and probably everybody else did the video of it.
Right.
It made a mushroom cloud just like a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, it was huge.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, that was one thing that happened. And let me see. Another thing I noticed this week was our president, the stable genius that he is, didn't know how to pronounce Yosemite, and he pronounced it Yosemite, which I thought was always kind of funny when somebody does that. But you would think that if you're going to go and have a speech about it, you'd probably want to know how to pronounce the thing.
Well, yeah, that's what you'd think, but you know, we got to remember who we're talking about here.
Well, I thought that was kind of interesting, and also, I got a few more local things here to talk about. One of them was a post, I don't know if you saw this, by our buddy, Mr. Bronenberg. And he's talking about this half a mile of shoreline down there that was a wide, flat beach. And I guess a lot of the land that kind of comes up to the edge of the beach has sort of turned into mud and washed down all over the beach. And I don't know if you read that, but the smooth limestone and stuff on the side of the beach. It was looked pretty interesting. Just wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Well, I there is a map that was part of that post about the Huff
Right
project down on Lake Monroe, and I always thought that the Corps of Engineers owned the entire shoreline, and but it turns out that they may have a little tiny, somebody may have a narrow, tiny little strip around the lake, but much of the land that goes right down to the lake is not managed by any government entity. And
right.
Where the Huff land is part of that. And I think this is what Alan's talking about.
Well, shoreline erosion is definitely an issue for any lake, but especially on in Lake Monroe, because it's not that deep, for one. And also, I just don't think that we have a whole lot of a watershed management plan in general that deals with some of these issues. I don't know what they could do, you know, whether it could be shored up or whether this is a real problem or not, but it certainly is kind of ugly where you just got this mud covering all the rocks there.
Well, I think that it's about time. This is one of the objects of, the Friends of Lake Monroe's group leader, the lady who formed the place, that's Sherry Mitchell Brooker,
mm-hmm.
Who is doing a lot of good things with this group. And one of the things that they did was post this complete story about the Huff development. And it turns out that the actual news story about this development includes talk about this half mile management area is from WFHB,
yeah.
News department, right?
Yep.
And they list the reasons for the lawsuit and where it stands and what's going on there. And they do talk about the incredible, I don't know what you want to call it. It's a labyrinth of management responsibilities around Lake Monroe.
Right.
It's no wonder that the place is a mess.
Yeah.
You know, there's no coordination, but we've got we have the DNR, we got the Indiana Division of Forestry, we got the Corps of Engineers, and we have one other, the Hoosier National Forest. All involved in management of land around Lake Monroe. Well, there probably needs to be a Lake Monroe Management District. And I know that the way Hoosiers are, nobody's going to like the idea of another bureaucracy. But right now we've got four bureaucracies plus private interests, quote unquote, managing Lake Monroe. And we got to remember how important this is, our source of drinking water, and no other source on the horizon.
No.
Unless we can, you know, pipe it down from Lake Michigan. So I don't know. You know, it's pretty important.
And that's just another reason that you don't want to see, you know, a lot of runoff and other issues that come with, especially with home building. And unfortunately, the Huff situation is an eyesore as well. It's just that, you know, if you look at the computer, the pictures they've taken, the aerial photography, it's just a big swath of, you know, trees that are gone.
It's much worse than I thought it was from those aerial photos that are on this WFHB article.
Yeah, it's really ugly. And
it's called Monroe County versus the Huffs is the lawsuit.
Yep.
And here's something that will be interesting to everybody. There has been at least one stop work order issued that was ignored by the Huff Trust after county attorneys stated it was in violation of zoning ordinance for them to proceed work without a liable permit. A liable permit. County attorneys have stated that with each day, Huff and or contractors continue work without these approvals, they will be subjected to fines.
Mm-hmm.
Now get this, if charged, fines would be $1,000 for the first day, $2,500 for the second day, and $7,500 for the third day and each succeeding day thereafter as the violation continues.
Right.
The county has also argued that the excavation on the property is on slopes steeper than allowed by county zoning rules. So, say the Huffs have tried for a change of judge, a change of court, dismissal of charges, and has countersued the county alleging defamation, among other things. So, darn good article by WFHB News.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Cade Young, who's the new news director and doing stuff like this, because it's fantastic to be able to hear it right from the horse's mouth, as it were, on the radio.
Yes, and it's the most extensive report that I've seen. Mm-hmm. The local newspaper, you know, has kind of fallen down on this, although they have reported something on it, which is better than nothing.
Sure.
But WFHB definitely doing the on the job here. So thanks a lot, WFHB.
Well, and I think all of these, the last two things we brought up were, you know, about the geography of the lake and, you know, the need to watch about the sedimentation and the erosion around the lake, as well as, and I mean, it's bad enough when it happens naturally, but it's real bad when you're just ignoring, you know, the law, which it seems to be what happened. I remember, you know, of course, I don't know precisely what the laws were and what they were in violation about, you know, in particular, other than we know that it happened in general. But I remember Bill talking about how, you know, there were just log after log coming up because they got to go right by his place pretty much.
Yeah, I know exactly where they, I looked at property right down there when right. I was moving back to Bloomington. And boy, I'm glad I didn't buy it now.
And that went along for a long time. And
yes.
So there's a lot of, and you can see from the aerial photography that a lot of woods are gone.
Yeah, you know, the right out on that peninsula there looks like it's going to be a campground.
Yeah.
But I guess it's going to be houses.
Right.
Or that's what they've got planned in any case.
Well, listen, I we're running out of time here. And
okay.
I just wondered if there's anything else you want to mention. We got just a couple minutes left here.
No, I'm run out of gas.
Okay. Well, it's been fun. I want to just re-mention that if you go through Inside Outdoors on the Facebook, you can send us a PM, a message. And if you'd like to be on our show, we'd be glad to invite you into the Zoom. If you know how to do Zoom and can do it, we'd be glad to have you on. If you want to ask some questions or just show up for a little bit, I feel bad because we can't answer the phone anymore when we're outside of the building. So
that's right. And you know, you can give you can send us a message on the Inside Outdoors on Facebook. You did get a message last week from a guy who said he loved our politics. No, I didn't know we had that many politics, but I guess we do.
We've been trying to stay kind of out of it, but you know.
It happens, doesn't it?
It does. Well, listen, okay. The music's playing, and again, we've been through another week. We can't wait to see you next week. We will be back on Zoom and do the best we can here.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
And don't forget, you're listening to WFHB. We're, you know, Bloomington's community radio. And if you can send us a few bucks now and then, we really appreciate that. You can go right on WFHB.org and click that secure donate button and help us stay on the air in this really difficult time. We're really, we need your help. All right. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.